take a break. I think that Shay is ready for that. And we'll come back, and unless Otis is on the line, but he is on the line? Otis! Well, he's talking to Shay. I'm not hearing him here.
Yes, I am on the line.
So there you go. Have you been had to put up with all that? I didn't know you were there. All right, good.
Yeah, well, you've been punished. Douglas, the last time I saw Rosie Douglas was in 1994 in Kampala, Uganda, at the 7th Pan-African Congress.
Whoa! Did you ask him about his adventures in Canada? By the way, he became prime minister.
I talked to him about that before, but we didn't really have time to talk about that then because we were in a Congress conference. But the guy who set him up was a guy by the name of Warren Hart.
Yes.
And Warren Hart lived across the street from me. I lived at Blue and Sherborne in a basement apartment, a one room. In a room,
yeah,
where I had to share the washroom, bathroom, whatever you call it, and
I think that's close.
Yeah, we're in Canada, different North America. Yeah, but anyway, the Warren Hart lived across the street in the penthouse. I never went up there, but I understand he lived in the penthouse right across the street from me.
Oh, lucky you!
And I met him as Al Sharpton was here. I met him personally, and he attempted to recruit me. He came to me with some talk about guns, and he started talking about guns, and I was already underground, and,
and you had enough trouble.
I could smell something was phony then, you know.
Yeah. Hey, listen. By the way, today's Strong Star. I think you called my attention to it, didn't you? You had read it. There's a picture of Rosie Douglas in today's Toronto Star. And the word that jumped out at me is that Rosie, they said, was a target, an RCMP target. And I've been talking here about the Chinese, and we have an elected member of parliament that, according to Scooper Hooper, they have targeted this individual for 10 years. Wouldn't you say to somebody, look, if you've been target him for 10 years, why don't you give it up? Obviously, you don't have anything, do you? Right? I mean, 10 years? I mean, why not just say from birth to death? Who are you to target a guy for 10 years? Who approved of that? And, of course, they targeted and they disrupted Rosie.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. And Rosie was a nice, he was a member of the Conservative Party when he first came up here.
They cured him of that, didn't they?
He came from the bourgeoisie of Dominica. His parents were richer than rich, but
you know, I'm glad you raised it. Don't you think, by the way, that it is more likely that somebody who has, you know, some capital, has some respect, has some power, is a little, their feelings get hurt quicker than our feelings because we're kind of used to being picked on.
Yep.
And he said, hey, wait a minute, I'm in the Conservative Party, man. Otis, of course, we want to talk to you about Black history, but particularly, I was very impressed, and you have an article about Paul Robeson. I think it was in the Blackbird Press, right?
It was in the Blackbird Press, but I think it may have been even published in the Globe and Mail at one time.
The piece that I saw, that was in the Globe.
No, the piece that you saw was published, I think it was reprinted from the Communist Party of Canada's newspaper.
Was it when it was the Tribune?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Very good. Well, listen, credit to them, credit to you. Paul Robeson, of course, got in all kinds of trouble for, he was a great American. Well, you tell the story. He did a bunch of firsts. Ivy League school.
He was a football star. He was a lawyer who could not practice law because of You know, he
apartheid.
They really didn't want to hire him. He was a great singer. I think he could speak 20 something languages. Succinctly, he was a Renaissance man, and he had the looks of like Harry Belafonte. He was quote unquote a pretty boy, and he was a tough guy. I mean, you know, he was
a bigger guy though. He was a very strong. He was an athlete.
Yes.
I mean, Harry was an actor, but this guy was an athlete.
Paul Robeson was. They say if you go into Harry Belafonte's room, the first thing you see is a photograph of Paul Robeson.
I think Harry Belafonte. I was starting to say, who is the second? With three or four major actors who said he was their guide.
It was Sidney, but they said that Harry had a meeting with him. It was Sidney and Harry. It might have been someone else, but Paul told them, do not make the same mistake that I made. Mm. But when I say make, you know, like, it's don't be so public, because Robeson's salary went from $100,000 a year to $6,000 a year.
And he lost his passport.
Yes, right.
And he wasn't allowed to cross the Canadian border. And he was blocked on both sides, right? And the Canadians would not let him in. He had to sing at the bridge.
He had to sing at the bridge, and they I think that album, we used to promote that album, that CD, mm-hmm. or that concert. Probably can still get it. It was actually recorded, right?
Mm-hmm. You talked about something that also culturally is really important. I don't know if very many people know about this. There was a collaboration of really outstanding black artists and intellectuals to create a song called King Joe. Can you talk about that?
That was in 1941. I went to a record store one time I used to talk to Max Roach, the drummer, quite a bit, and he told me the story about that years and years and years ago. And I went into a record store on Queen Street, Cops, and I found it as a 78, mm-hmm. and I broke it.
Oh. Ouch!
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, those are days you could break a record.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
it actually broke, but eventually it came out on YouTube, so on and so forth. But anyway, it was a recording. The name of the song was King Joe, and it was Count Basie's orchestra, and the song was written by. Is it written or wrote? By Richard Wright, the great
novelist,
Mississippi, supposedly the dumbest Negro in the world,
Native son,
or from Mississippi,
Native son,
Native son, and 100 years of lynching. Well, Richard Wright was a giant, but anyway, the song was called King Joe. It was about Joe Louis, the boxer. Paul Robeson, they got Paul Robeson to do to sing it. And, you know, Paul Robeson was not necessarily it didn't come out of the, I don't know how to put this. He wasn't from the blues tradition. Yeah, he was not like
At least as a performer.
He didn't, and he came out of the AME church, and I don't think the AME church doesn't have although it's African Methodist, the name, but they don't have the tradition of like the Church of God in Christ or the Baptist,
mm-hmm.
or he wasn't he wasn't like a Sam Cooke or Wilson Pickett or Mahalia Jackson or a
no he was mainstream Lincoln. Classical
yeah.
culture theater
yeah.
theater and music. I mean, of course, he got in the movies and the musical Showboat. I think he was in that. Yeah, he was.
He was in Showboat. Yeah. But anyway, he recorded the song King Joe, and there was a guy by the name of Mr. 5x5, Jimmy Russian, basically kept the time for him. So he had Jimmy Russian helping him, Count Basie's orchestra, and the song was penned by Richard Wright, and it was about Bill Lewis, the great boxer, who I knew that he had knocked out the German fellow, Max Schmeling.
Max Schmeling.
And but you were telling me about he had a fight with an Italian guy. Could you tell that story?
Yeah, Primo Canera, the Italian giant, and the Italians were celebrating him when they were invading Ethiopia, and black Americans took to the streets and knocking out Primo Canera, the Italian heavyweight champion, was obviously bigger for black America than beating Max Schmeling.
Oh, yeah, because Joe Louis's fights at that particular time, this is pre-television, pre-social media, so everybody sat around the radios and listened to the fight. Mm-hmm. And I think when Joe Louis knocked out Max Schmeling, I understand that the black America went crazy from New York to Los Angeles and from Detroit to the bottom of Florida.
Yeah, but at the time of the Italian invasion I guess at the time they was calling it Abyssinia. The resistance to that war was being organized almost entirely or strictly by black Americans because other Americans were indifferent to Italy's assault on what is now Ethiopia.
So there's footage of black people in New York City, resisting that particular situation. And there were Africans born in North Carolina, South Carolina, people from Jamaica, Trinidad, Barbados, everybody was, they were united about not fighting. They wanted to fight on the side of Ethiopia.
Yes.
They didn't want to fight for the United States, but they did want to fight on the side of the Ethiopians.
Yes.
That's something that, part of the history that is, I guess, a lot of the ruling circle, some elements of the ruling circle do not want people to know.
Absolutely. I know it's almost entirely forgotten. The value of Black History Month. It's time to remember all these things.
Let me say this. It's like, the whole question of the Filipinos, the fact that the Africans from America were drafted to fight in the Philippines and saw the Philippines.
Yes.
And many of them fought on the side of the Filipinos.
Yes.
And many their settlements right now with many of those soldiers have children, and they show solidarity with the Filipinos because they saw that you treat these Filipinos just like they treat us. So let's unite with them and fight against these Europeans.
That's a very interesting phenomenon of colonialism, imperialism. Often they try to enlist oppressed peoples to help, and sometimes that backfires because people say, well, don't ask me. I want to mention something. By the way, this is Norman Otis Richmond, bluesologist. Just write Norman Otis Richmond, read whatever you find there. There'll be plenty of good stuff. But you tell a kind of a nice, I thought it was really impressive in your piece that it, I think it was John Hammond said to Count Basie, hey, I see that Robeson is here tonight at this club, and I see that he's dancing. How about we ask him to join us on this, making this song about Joe Louis? And Count Basie says, oh, I'd love that, but I'm afraid to ask him. You ask him. It's like, I like the respect. How important Robeson was to Basie that he would be almost, like shy about approaching him.
That's true. But Count Basie was kind of a strange guy. I remember we talked to him about boycotting South Africa, and he supported us. He played someplace in Toronto. It's been so many years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was assigned to go talk to him, and he basically came out in support of our action. That's when I got the interview with him, right, for the Globe and Mail, because I interviewed him directly.
This is Norman Otis Richmond. You had an interview with Count Basie.
Yes, sir.
Where did that take place? We're going to put a plaque on the building.
It was in Toronto at the, Willie Jackson, Willie Jackson, a Jamaican guy, I think he was married, or it was married to, one of my best friends. I can't, boy, I'm having a serious senior moment. This woman's been killed.
You'll think of it. But what was he, I got to ask you, what was it like to meet Count Basie? You must have been a bit in awe. I would be.
Count Basie was, I think he seemed to be more in awe of me when I say he was such a humble guy.
Wow.
I mean, he was such a humble guy. He was like, you know, those people that make you feel like you've known him forever and ever and ever. He was that kind of a personality. He seemed to be pretty down to earth. And egoless, you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
he was not as bad as one of my good friends, Charles Burnett, the filmmaker.
Yeah,
he is ridiculously bashful and shy. You know, he won't take credit for anything. So Count Basie kind of came the opposite of Spike Lee and the opposite of Madonna. You know, he's not full of himself at all.
Oh, gee, that is great. I'm really glad we stumbled onto that question because I really hope people will. Richard Wright wrote the lyrics, and Count Basie, I guess, was in charge of the music. Is it Jimmy Rushing? Was it part of it?
Jimmy, Mr. 5x5, Jimmy Rushing, right?
Yeah. And we just have to say, if people don't know it, there were three great African-American black champions that changed American and world history: Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, and Muhammad Ali. And each of them, they were a milestone in their lives. And each of them paid a pretty heavy price, very heavy price. But they're giants. And it's just great that Count Basie produced that song, King Joe. And we probably don't hear it because they don't want to be reminded of how he was treated. We're speaking, of course, to Norman Otis Richmond. And Norman, you sent along a piece to me called Jay Douglas, Cream Rising to the Top. Who's Jay Douglas? What do you mean, rising to the top? What? Tell us the story a bit.
Well, Jay Douglas is a Jamaican-born artist. He was born in Montego Bay, Jamaica, same place that Horace Campbell is a great African historian of Africa, and I think he might even live in Africa now, but he lived here once. But anyway, Jay Douglas is from Montego Bay, the same area, and Jay Douglas came to Toronto as a high school student. I think he went to Harvard Collegiate, mm-hmm. or Central Tech, and, you know, he got involved in the music scene here and sang with a band called the Cougars, and he has been like a mainstay in the the black music scene.
And you say he's really finally, you know, getting his due, that he actually should have had greater regard previous. I mean, he's sort of come into his own.
Black musicians, let me be very point blank, very blunt. A lot of when I came to Toronto, Canada, a lot of black musicians, there were a lot of white Euro-Canadians playing in the midnight hour. You know, there was white Wilson Pickett's in the midnight hour, and, you know, and that a lot of the black guys.
It should be thieves in the night.
Many of them were from many men and women. They were a mixture of people from the Caribbean and black people born in North America, Canada and the United States. And the club owners would prefer to have the Pinocchio theory was in effect, where you could fake the funk and your nose wouldn't grow. You could fake the funk and get rich, you know. So these guys, people like Jay Douglas, could not really work for a long time. Or maybe they could, do some calypso, but leave the R&B and the jazz alone, That's white folks' music.
They could be the running back, but not the quarterback.
Yeah. And, you could sing, day-o, that day-o, and like, come, you could do that kind of stuff, but...
Yes, and then leave.
Yeah.
Well, Norman, it's been great.
But Jay broke that.
Well, the title is Jay Douglas, Cream Rising to the Top. And we've been talking to Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. And we're going to play Since I Saw You.
Since I Met You, baby. Written by Ivory Joe Hunter. And Ivory Joe Hunter, his son-in-law was a guy by the name of Ricky Stevens, who sang with the Tower of Power.
Oh boy!
That song, You're Still a Young Man. And Ricky Stevens spent 36 years in prison for murder.
We're gonna have to come back to you and the murder story. That's too good to tell today. Norman Otis Richmond, thank you very much, and we're gonna talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye bye.